From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. Well, it's dark, it's cold, and it is very rainy, and we may be a couple weeks from the solstice as of this recording, but for my money, we've definitely entered another Coast Range winter. I love to use this time of year to reflect and take stock, so I figured it was a great time to invite the Coast Range Association's Executive Director Chuck Willer back for our annual Year in Review episode. You can find more about everything we'll be discussing today at our website, coastrange.org, and I really want to take a second to encourage everyone listening to go to our website and subscribe to our email newsletter. We only send out a few emails a year, and I can promise that Chuck always has something to say that's worth reading. Okay, with that, let's jump right in. Chuck, welcome back to Coast Range Radio.
Well, thank you for having me here, and in putting some notes together for this year-end review, I was surprised at how much happened this past year, how many things we were involved in, how much work we got done. I'm kind of tired just reviewing the year.
I know. I was thinking that too, preparing for this episode. I'm like, oh, what are we even going to talk about? And then I start going back through and I was like, oh, that was this year and that was this year. I guess we've been busy. So,
I forget many of the things that happen until you start looking at the notes, reviewing the calendar and going, holy cow, we did a lot.
Let's get into it. But I mean, before actually we talk about kind of the specifics of our work and your narrative arc and the presentations you've been giving, just give me, you know, some initial reflections on 2023 as a whole. How's the year been? You can be Coast Range specific or just whatever.
Well, this was the first year I had the mental frame that this was post-COVID. Now, COVID's still happening. People are still taking precautions. But in terms of getting out in the communities, in the sense of travel, being face-to-face in many situations, this was the first full year that I felt I and you and all of us were back in action.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that strikes me thinking back is that the crises that drive our work since the founding of the Coast Range Association, the extinction crisis, the loss of habitat, et cetera, the climate crisis and multiple social crises have all become ever more present, I think, in our lives in the course of this year. So that's my perception of 2023. It obviously we're mission oriented, we're goal oriented, and we're addressing the most pressing challenges facing society at the moment and into the foreseeable future. And I think that's always been the mission of the Coast Range Association as a bioregional framing organization to take on the heavy work.
Well, speaking of that work, do you want to spend a couple minutes just touching on a few different projects that we've been engaged in the last year?
Yes. There's some nuts and bolts work that we do week in, week out, month in, month out. You know, January 25th was an important day, going back almost a year, and we made a commitment to create a new ocean coalition that would address broader policy issues and goals that have to do with the ocean. And now that we are at the end of the year, we're about to get into defining and creating what that new ocean coalition will address, who will be part of the coalition. And I look forward to 2024 to seeing that work begin. So it's been a momentous year on our ocean agenda, which we've been addressing for almost 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
The forest coalitions that we're involved with on a month in, a month out basis is the State Forest Coalition, and it addresses the new state forest management plan and the forest, the state's habitat conservation plan for 350,000 acres of state-owned forest, mostly in Clatsop and Tillamook counties. And, you know, that's just an ongoing process. I thought we'd put closure to most of that process in 2023 with the Board of Forestry adopting the HCP and a forest management plan, but things have not gone smoothly on that front, and the Board of Forestry continues to struggle. We've been working on state forests since 1993, I think, was the first time I went down and talked to the Department of Forestry about the Tillamook State and Clatsop State forest plans and their lack thereof. Mm-hmm. So on federal lands, during the Trump regime, federal forest planning went into mothball or a hiatus. And with the Biden presidency, the Forest Service has initiated and restarted the revision process for the Northwest Forest Plan. And that entails revising forest plans on all national forests, which in our case, this will be the Siuslaw National Forest, a new plan for it under some kind of revised Northwest Forest Plan. This will be very big, I think, in 2024. We have a lot of communities that we have supporters in that are embedded in national Siuslaw National Forest lands. And I and other conservation colleagues are active on a monthly Siuslaw collaborative with the Siuslaw National Forest on some forest project planning. But the revision of the forest plan and the Northwest Forest Plan is really where the big action is. And we'll see where that goes in 2024. So,
well,
that's the ocean and forest agendas in a nutshell.
Yeah, you're right. That is a really big deal to amend the Northwest Forest Plan. And I'm glad that you are going to be tracking that and putting in work on trying to help shape that to some degree. Could you tell us, just broad strokes, what's that process going to look like in terms of timeline? And are we going to have ways of keeping listeners updated on ways the public can engage?
Well, we'll definitely keep people updated on the process as it unfolds. As far as a timeline goes, I don't think the Biden administration, you know, is in a big hurry. This is not a priority. So I don't know what the timeline will be. It could be all of a sudden the agency catches fire and they're, you know, they're going through the processes, the steps and the stages that they have to do. So we'll see. I can't give you a guess even as to how fast this will unfold, but we're prepared. And we've been there before under the Obama administration. And we'll bring out the materials on planning, et cetera, when the time's right.
Any hopes or concerns specifically about that process at this point, or is it a little too early to in the process to for that?
Oh, yeah, I've got big concerns. the same concerns we had in the BLM five district plan revisions, which was under the Northwest Forest Plan. And the BLM withdrew from the Northwest Forest Plan, and specifically over aquatic issues. We were, I would say, the lead group on aquatic. We did aquatic issues. We had the science panel we sponsored. And I saw it coming early on. Almost all the forest groups were focused on BLM old growth, protecting the old growth. And I saw the gap on aquatic protections and stream protections. The work we did improved what the BLM was trying to do, which was really cut back on aquatic stream protections. So they'll look to, they're going to look for reduced stream protections. They're going to look for more latitude for the agency to cut timber. Nothing has changed in terms of what motivates the agency. They're still rewarded for cutting timber. They still keep the percentage of receipts. Communities still receive a percent of timber profits. That has never been reformed. And so there's plenty of room for industry trade associations, the timber companies, the sawmill companies, really, to push for a maximum plan, a plan that maximizes timber production within the constraints of the law. So
yeah,
this is going to be a big fight, and it's going to be something we have to work on.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you pointed out real quick, and then we can move on, because I think the Forest Service rhetoric has changed a lot in terms of how they frame their land management. But you're absolutely right that the incentives still haven't changed. And until the incentives change around how to manage the land, we're going to keep having these fights. So folks should keep an eye out for further updates from us, and we'll be definitely trying to keep folks in the loop about engagement opportunities there. So what else are you wanting to touch on in terms of work you've been doing in 2024?
Well, I think if we look back on the year, the challenge to Wall Street forestry and beyond, which is an evolving narrative, is something I have to visit. I did a massive amount of research into where the story went this year. And that is, we had mapped all this Wall Street ownership of forest. We had done the land reform proposal and the Green New Deal and forest proposal. We had identified social justice issues. And over those 2 years, I worked on an analysis of where timber company money goes. And we did a very large rural population analysis using census data. So in May, we published Wealth, Income, and Rural Communities, which addressed a couple of very important things. We looked at land ownership decline by small woodland owners. We looked and mapped a specific decline in census tract areas and community areas across the rural landscape. And these populations, growth or decline, are surrogates for local economic activity. Most of the rural landscape in Western Oregon saw poor or declining population growth. And that reflects the abandonment of the rural space, which is not an Oregon phenomena. It's a U.S. phenomena. And that abandonment, the way capital is invested, the way business enterprise moves around and develops markets, locates productive enterprise, all shows a trend away from rural areas to concentration in ever larger urban areas. And I think that explains a very big part of the shift in rural politics into reactionary politics, groups that advocate hate and scapegoating on immigrants, and all kinds of other ugly trends which underlie, sadly, a good part of the Republican Party now, is the matrix in the rural areas. And it's all driven by this abandonment by the economy. Now, what's the economy? And this is where I've gone this year. This is getting feedback, doing community presentations, consulting with community groups and key people. The analysis that I've done is a deep dive into not just timber and land ownership, but wealth ownership in general, and where, how companies and corporations in the United States are owned and managed. And this is a deep dive into finance capitalism, going all the way to Wall Street and the kind of venture capitalist and private equity dynamics that occur. And the thing that became quite clear as I did this research and followed the money out of the timber companies and towards Wall Street and how the dynamics works is how little the audiences were aware of just the mechanics of how our society works. And I think this is really a problem in politics that will address very big issues, including the climate crisis and multiple social issues and social crises. So now I feel I've got the analysis down, and this is, I think, important stuff. It goes way beyond the Coast Range, way beyond our organization. I hope it's a contribution to understanding just how this society operates and how wealth is distributed and why we have bad politics. But where I'm going, I think in 2024, now that I've gone deep into the heart of darkness on Wall Street and finance capital, is to now bring it back to Oregon, to Western Oregon, and restate how it plays out in our communities with housing, healthcare, education, land ownership, and land management. And that's what I will look forward to next in 2024, is to bring it back home and have a complete story arc here. That probably merits a book if I wasn't so lazy. But I think I'll have some pretty dynamic community presentations and talks. And it won't be too long from now. I think we'll release a talk in a professionally produced video that I think is going to garner a lot of attention in the Pacific Northwest, if not nationally, amongst people that are dealing with big issues like the climate crisis, healthcare crisis, and other crises.
Well, that sounds great. I love to hear that. I mean, of course, I'm always telling you to record those talks so we can put them up on our Facebook and YouTube. We do actually, for folks listening, we do actually have a couple of Chuck's different talks on our YouTube page and on our Facebook, on our website, because I think the evolving nature makes each talk relevant in a different way. I did want to ask real quick, you know, something that comes up for me when you talk about how little people understand about the nature of the way capitalism is working right now. I think about us as having a couple different audiences here. One would be, say, your average person living in the Coast Range or in the coast or on the valley, your kind of average person that may or may not be engaged already. And then you have this different audience of, say, folks like myself, you know, who maybe haven't read all the economy books that you've read, but understand broad strokes the problems with capitalism. And I would just wonder how you think about the different ways to speak to those different audiences, you know, because it is a different kind of education that we have to do there.
Well, I have three thoughts. My first thought is the grassroots groups that I know and that are active, particularly on the coast. Just for example, the Beaver Creek struggle this summer over herbicide spray. Mm-hmm. That was over a forest landowner from Europe who lives in a castle. That's an example of the kind of follow the money capital dynamics that comes to Western Oregon. And the North Coast Watershed Coalition, their struggle with TIAA or TIAA's ownership in the Rockaway ownership or watershed for their drinking water. So that's one thing I think about, grassroots groups struggling with land resources and the kind of ownership that's vexing them. The second thing is I think about what kind of a narrative unifies multiple progressive advocacy groups. You know, we work in conservation, we work on forest, we work on water. Why do people down my block who have a sign out about healthcare reform, how come we aren't having a common discussion? Because what's vexing and distorting U.S. healthcare, what's distorting land ownership, natural resources, what's distorting our whole response to climate is the same problem. The same problem of for-profit corporations, huge for-profit corporations, owned by huge pools of capital and the dynamics of capital in corporations. There should be a common movement that unites us. And then I think about, and this I think goes more to your question, the difference between people that are somewhat sophisticated about issues, who pay attention to issues, and many just regular folks who are living their lives and are often confused in today's media and information environment, which is full of false information and leads to a lot of false consciousness. What kind of story can everyday people hear that's powerful and important? You know, not pablum, not distracting, not red herring, but directly to the point of those things that are causing our pain, causing the climate crisis, healthcare crisis, education crisis, housing crisis, childcare crisis. I mean, you can go on all day.
Right.
How do we talk to regular people in a narrative that's unifying and clear? that's a big challenge. And it's something you and I and others in the Coast Range Association, we've talked about and we struggle with. And I'm hoping in 2024, we get down the road and see some success.
Yeah. And something actually I thought you were going to bring up there, because you do bring it up a lot, is progressive populism as a way of bringing disparate groups together. And I think that that is really fertile ground to plow, so to speak, there. You know, we've seen what right-wing populism can do and how potent populism can be as a message. But a lot of people in this day and age only see populism as a right-wing phenomenon, whereas you've pointed out time and again that really there's a rich, rich tradition of progressive populism uniting folks of all different stripes to push for really progressive change. And well, so I'm hoping that we can make progress on that road as well.
The right-wing pop, the anti-populist narrative is very big in Europe. And there's a reason for that. Europe's particular history with fascist movements, reactionary movements, racist movements, scapegoating movements, the Holocaust of the Jews, World War II. I mean, and you know, I understand that. They do not have a history, in at least in the 20th century, in the 21st, of a progressive populism that the U.S. had, going back to the late 19th century. And the prairie populist and the anti-monopoly coalitions and all that. So the United States has a different tradition when it comes to things that appeal to a broad swath of people, farmers, business people, rural people. We have a different tradition, although the reactionary populist bent is certainly fanned and engendered in the United States now. There's always that right-wing, quasi-fascist tendency in U.S. culture. It gets played down in, you know, school history books, but there's an ugly theme. You know, Jim Crow laws in the 20th century, that's your biggest example of how this society was sent sideways and continued, really, the legacy of slavery and the racism that's endemic in the whole society. So, yeah, there's concern. I'm from the Midwest. I'm familiar with prairie populism and people coming together for the struggle to get their fair share. And, you know, everything about in economics, and don't get me going about economics, but everything in economics, when it comes to the corporate world, to the big firm, You only have two sides. You have the amount of the wage share that goes to, you know, the workers, and you have the profit share that goes to the owners. And that struggle that fight goes back and forth for the past 150 years in the rise of large corporate actors. And right now, since the Reagan era, the owners and the profit share has been winning and increasing, and the wage share has been declining. That is an important distinction that is very common in classical economics, and it's very relevant to the struggle people face day in and day out, and why we have 50% of households in the United States with no net worth, 60% of households living paycheck to paycheck, and massive cash flow and wealth, particularly amongst the top 10% of households in this country. And we don't even need to mention the top 1% and the amount of wealth they capture and the amount of waste they generate.
Well, we've strayed a little far afield there from our our core mission of Coast Range, but it really does connect, right? Because most of the major economic forces happening in, as you rightly point out, everywhere, but definitely here in the Coast Range, are these unfettered capitalist engines driven by Wall Street firms. So I want to look ahead to kind of where you want to go with that narrative, what you want to be focusing on in 2024. And I'll just button up this discussion we were just having with, if folks want to learn a little more about kind of a multicultural progressive populism, I can't recommend enough the book Some of Us by Heather McGee. It is It's a fantastic book, one of the best books I've read in a while. The subtitle is What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together. And I think there's a lot of lessons for all of us to learn there. I'm sure there's a lot more book recommendations we could go into, but we are starting to get over time here. So,
well, Michael, I would say this, our work is important, and I think we do good work. We're not a normal organization in terms of conservation advocacy. We dig deep into issues. If people think our work has merit, we definitely need supporters to subscribe to our newsletters. I think to just sum up is that there's going to be some exciting things happening in 2024, ocean-wise, forest-wise, and our social agenda, climate agenda, dealing with finance capital and how it impacts our lives. We've got some big stuff coming out. We're going to continue to develop our stories and provide quality information to people at the community level to enhance their advocacy, their ability to change and impact events that shape their lives. So that's I think our message. That's what we're doing day in and day out. And 2023 has been a productive year. And I'm looking forward to 2024 because I think we can see clearly to some exciting new work and continuing the roads we're traveling.
Absolutely. And for anyone listening to this, I want to let you know that Chuck and I are really raring to get out and do more community presentations, meet more folks, and really help build on the work that Chuck has done and help communities all up and down the Coast Range with your specific watershed issues, your specific forest issues, and really stitch some of these communities together and build some big coalitions. So if you're interested in any of that work, if you want to bring Chuck in to give a presentation at your community center, at your local library, wherever it may be, you can email me, michael@coastrange.org, and we can help you set something up. So as we start to wrap up, Chuck, is there anything that we've missed, anything you want to circle back to or make sure that we include in this discussion?
Well, no, I think that was a real good statement on your part. Our support for grassroots groups, particularly coastal groups. I will be speaking with watershed advocates, water defenders in Seal Rock in January. I have a standing invite for a January meeting and discussion and presentation for the North Coast Watershed Coalition. That might be in Rockaway Beach. It might be in Nehalem. So I'm raring to go. You're raring to go. Let's go.
Well, absolutely. That seems like a great place to leave it, unless you've got any last thoughts.
Well, sign up for our information on the website. Help us grow larger and more impactful. It doesn't do any good to have this knowledge in files, in a computer, or in my head, in your head, or just shared with a small network. We really have to get our information out to broad communities.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming back on Coast Range Radio. It's been a great year working with you, and I look forward to 2024, Chuck. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. We'll have links to everything we talked about today in the podcast show notes, Facebook and Instagram, and at coastrange.org. Thanks so much to our community radio station partners for carrying the show. Coast Range Radio is a production of the Coast Range Association. We're at coastrange.org. If you like what we do, please consider supporting our work. Whether it's signing up for our email list or just telling your friends about the show, we truly appreciate your support. Drop me a line anytime, michael@coastrange.org, and let me know what you thought of this episode. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
From applicant tracking systems to chatbots to facial recognition, artificial intelligence is transforming our world for the better and also for the worse. Tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. for The Imaginary Possible, a show that looks at the captivating potentials and the troubling realities of artificial intelligence today. Only on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at